Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast special, well, I guess emergency edition. The Milwaukee Bucks are going to the NBA Finals, so we had to bring in some luminaries to talk all about it. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I'm alongside Jim Ozarski, Bucks beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, per usual. But we have some very, very special guests, previous Bucks beat reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They've seen the good. They've seen a whole lot of bad as well. We've got Charles Gardner and Matt Velasquez. Legends. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us on the Point Forward podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely happy to be here.
Yes, Matt, thanks, guys.
Matt is chilling in Indianapolis. Charles, you're still in Milwaukee, right? You're riding the Bucks wave like everybody else.
Yeah, I'm at Pike Lake in Hartford today. Beautiful day on the lake here today.
Awesome. So we got to talk about some of the historical context around this Bucks team being where it is. But first of all, we'll dive a little bit briefly into this, Jim, because you're in Phoenix. Setting up here for game one on Tuesday night at Phoenix Suns Arena. That'll be a 7 p.m., 8 p.m. local tip time. And Jim, everyone wants to know about Giannis. Like, that's the only thing. I mean, every conversation has to start with Giannis. He is not going to be made available in the media portion later on Monday. By the time people have heard this, they'll probably have seen quite a few quotes that have come out from that media session. Kind of surprising that we're not going to hear from him. I mean, that's as legitimate a game time decision as we're going to see. So what are you thinking? Where's your head at with how you're reading between the lines on Giannis's availability?
Yeah, they, you know, the official word from the league is that he is not going to speak today because he's uncertain for game one tomorrow, which, I mean, Matt and Charles could speak to this also. It probably means he is not going to practice today with the Bucks. We're allowed to see the way that's set up here is we'll see the last 15 minutes of the Suns practice, then they will speak. We will see the first 15 minutes of the Bucks practice, and then they'll speak after. So I'm guessing we won't see him out there because I guess he can appear on the court, but not practice. So that's sort of how they're getting around he's not available. I'll be honest though. I mean, I'll say it, guys, like this is the first finals for the city of Milwaukee. And since 1974, he's a two-time league MVP, but like an international face. I'm a little surprised that we're not going to know how he feels about it until game whatever, but that is what it is. And I guess in terms of the court, guys, I think it just means maybe he remains just that, uncertain to start the finals a week from his injury.
Yeah, obviously, this is still going to be a storyline we'll follow. Giannis, his availability, et cetera. But I want to talk to these guys. They've seen a lot of Bucks basketball. Like I said, a lot of good, a lot of bad. I want to start with Charles. He took over back in 2003, so he didn't get to see the 2001 team go to the Eastern Conference Finals, a series that maybe we'll actually start to talk about less in Milwaukee now that they've gotten past that Eastern Conference Finals barrier. But we still talk a lot about it because it's the last great success story before the current sort of 3-4 year window the Bucks have been on. The 2003 Bucks, George Karl gets fired. It doesn't look good. Charles, I wonder if you thought you would ever see the day when the Milwaukee Bucks would be playing for a championship in the NBA Finals. Take us back through the pantheon of Bucks early 2000s basketball and what you remember from that stretch of time.
Well, you're right, JR. It seemed like a distant dream, did it not? And, you know, when you think about Giannis's rookie year, the year they won 15 games, and I was looking back through some of the old media guides and just seeing some of those players and the guys who were on those teams. This is why I laughed the other night when I heard Chris Middleton. I loved it that in the post game after they won in Atlanta, he said something about the 15 win season because he had come also, you know, in the trade with Brandon Knight. And so these guys remember, and Giannis certainly remembers as a rookie that year, how bad they were. And to come long, it's been a long way, you know, Jason Kidd helping develop Giannis in summer league, Chris being a throw in that trade for Brandon Knight and becoming an all-star and such a key performer. We really saw in the Atlanta series how great Chris has developed, and that's good to see. But yes, there were a lot of struggles, a lot of players that, you know, you think about Brandon Knight and Brandon Jennings, who were the key members of that trade, and you know they aren't around. But look at what Chris is doing.
Yeah, what do you remember about that trade? Because obviously Middleton being a throw-in in that deal is sort of the great storyline of that whole thing. But Brandon Jennings going elsewhere, you know, that was sort of a, I don't want to say a failure, but, you know, Brandon Jennings is what we remember is a 55-point game his rookie year. And then, you know, it sort of faded away after that. And to have him go elsewhere, that's probably a rough patch in Bucks history. Brandon Knight comes back. He's two-time, you know, leads in scoring 2 years in a row. And then obviously Chris Middleton develops into what he does, but there's no way anyone saw that deal as working out. I would have to think at the time, I thought it was kind of a surrender for the Bucks.
Well, yes, I remember at the time because Brandon was a restricted free agent. So the Bucks were trying to get something for him. And I think there was thoughts that they were going to re-sign him, but he had been inconsistent with his shooting and, you know, with his overall game. You said it, JR, with that 55-point game that he had in the seventh game of his NBA career. And, you know, he told me it was a blessing and a curse. That was his line. And I thought that was so great. He told me that in Orlando. That didn't become as famous as the Bucks in six line, which I always get mad about because he told me a blessing and a curse. But, you know, that wasn't such a big deal. But but I always thought that was such a great quote also when he said that was a blessing and a curse, because it did. It kind of, people expected a lot from him. He was expected, you know, to be rookie of the year, and he wasn't, and all those type of things. And he still had it. You know, a decent time in Milwaukee, but inconsistent. And I think John Hammond at the time thought, you know, we can maybe make an improvement. They made that deal with Detroit. Hammond had been in Detroit previously, and so there was some connection there. And, you know, Chris had had a knee injury, and that's why he had fallen to the second round in the draft. And, so he was kind of an unknown factor. And I had some people affiliated with the Bucks told me, look, Charles, if Chris had not been hurt, he would have for sure been a first round pick. But that all worked out in the Bucks' favor, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure. Jim, Brandon Jennings is a West Coast guy, and the Bucks just won in six. Are you hearing any buzz that they're going to bring the man out to Phoenix or maybe back to Milwaukee? Let's do this, right?
Well, I don't know about the team. But actually, guys, Matt Charles will laugh at this. I talked to Larry Sanders last night.
Oh,
Larry Sanders, exclamation point.
Yeah, Larry. And he said, because he said he's still tight with Brandon, that they're trying to see if they can arrive in Milwaukee for one of the games three or four. Now, we'll see if that actually happens or not. But, you know, they're aware of it. And Larry thought, I mean, Bucks and six, Charles, Larry. I mean, he still laughs at that. He's like, that man said that like,
I love it.
Yeah. But I, you know, Charles, I was there for that trade too with Chris Middleton. And I remember it was about Brandon Knight and it was this other dude. And he hasn't changed in terms of his, like, Matt obviously covered him as he became an all-star. So his demeanor hasn't changed. The way he approaches the game, and Larry, that's why I want to talk to Larry, honestly, because he's like, Middleton was always the guy who felt he had the chip on the shoulder, Charles, because you said with the draft status, with the idea that he wasn't supposed to be anything. And he's like, every day in practice, and it was that thing where if he gave up a bucket one-on-ones, he had to get one of his own. And it was all that work and that work and that work. And I think you've seen it here in these finals and coming up, or this playoff run where he might be 4-18, but he's still going to be the guy that they're leaning on in the fourth quarter.
I mean, and you remember Chris Middleton after that trade. Yes, like the trade was about Brandon Knight, right? Like that was, you know, the headline, trading Brandon's, right? But then Chris Middleton, he was a starter opening night. And I guess that Bucks team had injuries and they had, you know, poor roster construction or whatever you want to call it. They had a whole bunch of issues. But Chris Middleton was starting that first night he got to Milwaukee. Like, he had earned enough of a spot in training camp that they had some faith in him. And he was just kind of this, soft-spoken guy, just went about his business, worked really hard. And of course, the focus wasn't ever on him. Like, we'd go into the locker room. That was my first year, helping out Charles and covering the Bucks. Like, you could, he was always accessible, but he's not one of the first guys you're trying to talk to. You're trying to talk to Brandon and to OJ Mayo and trying to get to Larry Sanders when he was actually playing. And, you're trying to get in with those guys. And Caron Butler obviously is like holding court like every day, because that's just kind of how his personality is. It's just what he wants to do. He tries to draw you in. And then people were interested in Giannis, and there was a lot of hype around him and what he was going to be in. And Nate Walters, Nader's going to Nate, and people kind of fell into his, whole, kind of, he had a really nice stretch there for a while. Like, that was that season. And meanwhile, Chris Middleton's just like, I'm just going to play basketball and like be under the radar and play fairly well and kind of set that foundation for what would be the continued growth that he had year over year until, now he's where he is.
One of the quietest superstar ascents I think we'll see, and you're describing exactly why that is. And so you saw Middleton, Matt, you saw Middleton and Giannis, develop into a great 1-2 punch. And you saw these very good Bucks teams that went to the Eastern Conference Finals against Toronto, went back-to-back seasons where they were the best record in the NBA. Of course, the 2020 season ends in the Orlando bubble unceremoniously for the Bucks. But yeah, as you've seen them from afar, you back out 1 year later. The first year you're gone, they end up going to the NBA Finals. But as you see them from afar, what's different? It might just be Jrue Holiday. That I'm starting to wonder if that's just the answer to all the questions. But what do you think put this team over the top?
Well, I think Jrue Holiday is a big part of it. And he can do more things than Eric Bledsoe can do, and he affects that lineup and their schemes, everything they can do, more than Eric Bledsoe could have. I mean, he just had limitations as a player, and he was the right guy for a time and a place, and you had to give that a chance. It didn't work. And so you move on, you try the next thing. I think somebody like PJ Tucker, somebody who just has that, like, that edge and that physicality. They haven't had a guy with edge and physicality. You could say Giannis is that, but he's not the same. So having just kind of, he's a we dogs, right? Like that, they haven't had a dog in like a long time. I think that's important. I think you look at Bud and the way that he has been willing to experiment and change during the regular season and kind of do things differently and even adjust in the postseason too. I think those changes over the course of time have been beneficial. And then you just look at all the struggles and all the trials this team has gone through, and they've kept a lot of the core together. Like, yes, like there has been roster turnover, things have changed, but you have those core guys who went through the Toronto series. Some of them even go back to losing to the Celtics in 7 the year before that. You have the bubble experience, all those expectations and all those, you can call them failures. Like, they didn't get to where they wanted to get to. I think you learn over the course of those things. At least it has seemed like, it's looked like they've learned. They've been able to use those experiences to kind of just grow and understand the pressure of the playoffs and kind of rhythm of the playoffs. And when they get down to the Nets, in past years, they could have just crumbled. But I think that they were able to find that resolve and bounce back and also to schematically adjust. And then you look at, the issues they had in the Atlanta series with the way that the Hawks took game one. And then, Giannis getting hurt a couple games later, those again could have been, just totally subverting their whole thing. But instead they were able to pull together, find a new way to work together and come up with the performances they needed. So I think just the combination of all those things have put them in a situation this year where, their title window has been able to stay open and they are now in control of their own destiny.
How about you, Charles? What are you seeing from the outside? And, maybe it's the exact same things. Anything else that jumps out at you?
Yeah, well, I agree with Matt about, watching game 6 the other night. I mean, Jrue Holiday, my goodness. I mean, they just haven't had a guy like him. He's spinning to the basket. He's finding guys. His energy is just incredible. He was just all over the court. I think Reggie Miller said something about he's everywhere. He was just everywhere in the game. He was not going to let them lose that game. And then of course Chris going crazy you know, was amazing in the third quarter. And we've grown used to that. He can go on a streak like that. But I totally agree with Matt about Tucker. I think Tucker and Holiday both, you know, you saw Holiday like guarding Gallinari, and that's a tough deal right there. That's a tough deal, but he's still pushing him out, and he's able to hang in there with a player like that. And they haven't had that. I also thought the way Brook Lopez responded in game five, you know, I was up on the second floor. I've been helping the Associated Press a few games, but just helping them out. But on game five, I just had a ticket. And so I was, people that know me, you know I'm not always the calmest guy. So I was pacing the second floor. And just to see Brooke, I mean, wow, you know, he responded. Matt was talking about how, you know, a lesser team, this could have sunk them, really. And you thought Atlanta, you know, all the pundits were saying, well, Atlanta has a deeper bench, you know, they're without Giannis. And it seemed like maybe that would be so, but no, you know, they went to Brooke, they went to the new Milwaukee hero, Bobby P. And, you know, when you looked at Bogdanovich, you know, I think maybe that's the best thing that never happened to the Bucks, because I know he's a great shooter. You know, every time he lined up to shoot a shot in that series, you're like, oh, you know, that's going in. But, you know, then they were, and Jim and Matt could probably speak to this better than I can, but then they were able to get Portis. Then they were able to, you know, have some other elements. Would they have gotten those guys if they had Bogdanovich? I don't know. But, you know, they needed to have some guys that could come off the bench and really produce. And I know, Matt, the bench play on those teams you had was pretty good too, but it just seems like this is a different mix that is doing better in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it was interesting with those past teams, especially the most recent years, they did have good benches. Like, that's the reason why they were able to have these, like, 60-win, you know, regular seasons or be on that kind of pace, was because they had that deep bench, and Bud could go 11 deep in a game, and there wasn't too much of a drop-off. But the problem was guys didn't show up in the playoffs. And it seems like from last year to this year, they almost, like, trimmed the fat, so to speak. They said, you know what? Like, let's give Bud fewer guys to play, but we want to keep the guys who will actually perform come playoff time. Like, you know, you have your 82 game players and your 16 game players, you know, and you need those guys who will show up. And, you know, a lot of people gave the Bucks grief, and maybe rightfully so, for Pat Connaughton's contract, but he showed up. He's played. He's been an integral part of these playoffs. You know, and, you know, Bryn Forbes bringing him in, he hasn't done a ton, you know, in terms of the playoffs, but having just that shooting and the, you know, the threat of him shooting is important. You know, you mentioned Bobby Portis and how big of a signing that is. Imagine if they took him in the draft instead of Rashad Vaughn a few years back.
I mean, we remember that, don't we, Matt?
We remember that all too clearly. You know, that, you know, who knows where Bobby is or what happens after that, or if this all comes to fruition or whatever. Right. But, like, you know, he's been great. And obviously he didn't play a ton in that Nets series. And, you know, anybody who's covered any team has heard the phrase, you know, stay ready, like, a million times. And, like, this is, like, the absolute encapsulation of that. Like, they didn't necessarily need him as much for that series. Maybe they do better if they actually used him. But they got through it without him. And then in the Atlanta series, they really needed to lean on him more. So, you know, I think just looking at the way the Bucks have been able to go from the guys they had, the deep bench, the different configurations, whatever they could do, to now, even without Dante DiVincenzo, even without Giannis for a couple games, finding the guys who will play and will fit and will actually perform. You know, we don't need any, I don't think the Bucks need it anymore, like Nikola Mirotic situations or Pau Gasol situations. I mean, or even, like, you know, Marvin Williams, like, guys they all added late in seasons, you know, on the buyout market and stuff, or in Mirotic's case, a trade. None of those guys translated to playoff success. And this year, for whatever reason, they found a mix of guys who can perform at playoff time, which is really when you need them.
Yeah, the great adjustment that is both coaching and front office roster management is tightening this roster. And obviously that went hand in hand with how Coach Mike Budenholzer worked things this season to get them to improve defensively in ways that they were weak last year, so that they could go seven games with the Brooklyn Nets and win that series. So they could, you know, get their way past the Eastern Conference Finals. And that seems to have worked. Now, I'm curious what you guys think of Coach Budenholzer at this point. We're still going to have a fringe element of folks who still believe that the Bucks are better off without him as head coach. We heard a lot of static this year, a lot of concern that if the Bucks fell short of where they were in past years, that Budenholzer would be asked to go after just three seasons, after two of which were the best record in the regular season. I think everybody agrees that the regular season isn't the goal for this team. And it's just a question for me of how fair is it to have that go fall at the feet of the coach who not only A, did that in the regular season, but then B, adjusted in season three, took a few more regular season losses and put them in position to get where they are now. I do think you have to give him a ton of credit. They're inches, Kevin Durant's toes away from maybe not being in this position, or many other, you know, pivot points you could point to. How fair has that been in your mind? And Jim, you can even chime in on this. I know we've talked about it a lot, but now that they're in the finals, you got to think his job is safe, but I don't even know. I don't even know if we're there yet. So I feel stupid to say. I think his job is safe. But what do you guys think? Jim, you tell me first how you feel about Budenholzer's job security, his job performance at this point.
Well, I'll get out in and out here because Matt would have the better context of the first 2 years to what he's seen this year. But even PJ Tucker laughed. I asked him directly about this. And Tucker's like, well, people would tell me Bud doesn't adjust, but we've adjusted quite a bit. And I mean, PJ's probably more social media savvy than most of the guys. So maybe he hears a lot of that chatter. Chris Middleton, it's funny because he has said all year, yes, Bud's adjusting, but he's listening to us. He's letting us do if we see or want to do something. So maybe that's the same. You know, maybe that's a change from the last couple of years, which Matt could speak to. But now, in terms of his future, our Bill Glauber got a hold of the owners for an upcoming story at jsonline.com. And I was like, hey, we got to ask about Bud. And I don't know which owner, because he did all three, but one of them said, we haven't thought about that yet. We haven't thought. So I mean, they made a headline maybe without trying to make a headline. So I'll leave that as that. But Matt, I guess, can you speak to, I guess, what you've seen out of Bud? Because to me, it feels like he's done different things, whether it's as fast as people want or not. I feel like he's answered those questions, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think it's funny to hear that quote from the owners. Like, I can understand the context of, like, we're in the middle of celebrating the Eastern Conference Finals and we're going to the NBA Finals. We haven't thought about that. But, like, that's also not an endorsement. So,
also, liar, liar, pants on fire. Of course they thought about that.
So it's like, okay, like, I get what you're trying to say. But, like, if you just say, oh, yeah, Bud's great, but, like, it's not Camille. Anyway, comparing where he was at the start of his time in Milwaukee, where I feel like he was a little bit more rigid. You know, I know that he had a bunch of friction with Middleton that first season because Bud had an idea of how he wanted the team to play and Middleton didn't fit in that box. That they cut out a lot of their mid range and, like, you know, he called it like Chris's comfort food, and like Chris wasn't happy about it. Like, he was like, hey, like, you're just telling me to shoot all these threes, but you're not giving me these shots that I'm really good at, even though they're like inefficient shots, quote unquote, for other people. Like, I'm elite at doing those. And so, like, there was a lot of like push and pull with that. And they, like, basically only did drop coverage at, like, all times, like, that first year. And they were kind of like a one trick pony, right? Like, they did what they did and they decided that's all that we're going to do. Then they hit the playoffs and they had an inability to adjust because they hadn't practiced doing those things very often. So I think you saw a little bit of a change, a little bit of like shift that second year, but then the bubble throws everything off and who knows what would have happened if things hadn't changed. Maybe the results wouldn't have been any different. Like, the Miami Heat had their number and they bubble or not, maybe they don't do anything about that. And so you look at this year and I think that, you know, there was that sacrifice. I mean, just watching from afar, like, they were going to lose more games in the regular season because they were going to try stuff and they were going to do things differently and they were going to change, see what works. and the ability of Bud to listen to his players and understand, okay, how do they want to play and what are they seeing? And we don't have to be so rigid in our schemes. We can be more flexible and let these guys kind of play it how they want to, maybe a little bit more. I think that you've seen that. I mean, obviously there's still some like confusing rotation stuff that I feel like that's just never going to change. And like some of it, like I get, it's like, oh, you know, at the last like 30 seconds of a quarter, like throw Thanasis in there so nobody gets a foul and maybe get some energy plays. Like, oh, like maybe we can steal like 3 to 5 minutes of Jeff Teague here and there. You know, cause guys need a break and we want him to be fresh. I mean, he's not playing Jeff Teague in like the fourth quarter. So, you know, he hasn't gone absolutely crazy. But you know, I can understand those little things, but you can also understand the counterpoint of like, it's the playoffs. Like you can't afford to, you know, kind of roll the dice on 3 to 5 minutes with guys who may not be up to the challenge. But like, you know, that's, I wonder how much of a push and pull there is with the medical side of things where they're like, hey, we've done all the research. We know like optimal outputs from players are when they play X amount of minutes or X amount of minutes in a row. Like if you can break that up and throw, you know, Jeff Teague in there or like Brent Forbes or whoever, just throw them in there for a couple minutes and try and steal that in like the first or second quarter and then have those guys fresh later in the game. Like maybe that's the calculus there that may not be fully in Budenholzer's hands. Like maybe there is some input from the medical side telling them, hey, you need to run things a certain way. But even when it comes to minutes, we've seen Giannis over the course of the playoffs extended well over 40 minutes. We've seen Middleton extended well over 40 minutes. Like in the series against the Raptors a couple of years ago, there was like one game where each guy played more than 40 minutes. It was astounding after watching Jason Kidd like run them into the ground like on Tuesday night in Cleveland.
Right.
like we saw that happen for a full season. So seeing these guys like not be able to play was like very confusing. So I think that there has been development there. I think that Bud, you know, has definitely progressed and shown what he's willing to do. He just doesn't have as good a PR as like a lot of other coaches. Like I feel like he just doesn't play the game and like he doesn't, he's not a great quote. He's not somebody who is like super magnanimous and like making friends. I mean, I'm sure he has a lot of friends like in the media and around the league or whatever, but like, it's just not the same way. So I think that if he's getting dumped on, like, I don't think he cares or even knows. And he just is like, whatever, I'm going to do what I'm going to do because I'm so focused on what I'm trying to do and our players and whatever. And, like, you know, I guess credit him for knowing who he is and being okay in his skin. But it becomes an issue where he's getting, like, roasted, like, all the time. And, like, that's also just not a good look for the franchise if you're just letting your coach just, like, get trashed, like, left and right. So, in my opinion, watching from afar, I think he's done enough to earn more time in the job. He has the trust of his players. He's taken this team somewhere they haven't been since 1974 and has proven that his system can work. And so, you know, it'll just be a function of, you know, we'll see how the finals go. And maybe that could affect how, you know, the outlook is, you know, give it a week or two.
How about you, Charles? What do you think?
Well, I like what Matt said about Bud's demeanor. And I think that's true. Like he just doesn't care about the media side of things, you know, and whether that's the San Antonio Spurs, you know, that's kind of the way, right? That's the Popovich way of handling things. And that's where he grew up. And I do think it can be a detriment, right? As Matt was talking about. And, you know, I always remember when I go to Philly and Doug Collins was in Philly and I'd tell the writers in Philly, I was like, you guys got this guy every day? You know, he would just fill up your notebook. I mean, he would expound about basketball. We all know about coaches, you know, who are good that way. You know, why Doc Rivers? I mean, one reason, you know, the writers love him because he's going to be pretty open with you. And there are coaches that just are the other way around. And, you know, so but as far as what he's done coaching the team, Jim and I had a discussion, you know, maybe a few weeks ago and, you know, all this talk was coming up and I said, really? You know, I mean, wait and see what happens. You know, I get it that I think it's more impressive in a way, because he's had all this pressure on. He certainly knew inside that if they didn't survive the Brooklyn series, he probably wasn't coming back. And so, you know, that's a ton of pressure when you're coaching against Kevin Durant every night and the way he was going off in that series. So I think you do have to give him some credit. And I think he is a good coach. You know, I saw him in Atlanta when he was with the Hawks, and they had that team that had the best regular season record. And, you know, the writers in Atlanta always told me, they were like, Charles, oh, you know, in the pregame, they would say, Charles, you're not going to get much from Bud when he comes in for the pregame, because he just was usually pretty tight-lipped. I felt, and I told the guys here, I told Matt and Jim, that he's more open in Milwaukee than he was in Atlanta. So, but it's just, it's not his style to be loquacious, maybe.
No. Charles, when was the last time there was a great quote of a coach in Milwaukee?
Well, probably Scott Skiles.
Scott was good.
Scott was really good. You know, I always tell the story about Scott that Casey Johnson, I told you guys have heard it, but Casey Johnson, the beat writer at the Tribune, when, you know, of course, he had Scott with the Bulls. And then when he came here, Casey pulled me aside at the United Center and he says, Charles, can I have my coach back? And I was like, no, you can't have your coach back, because he was so good. You know, it's he spoke to the media. He told it like it was. What was the thing in Chicago? They asked him about who is the player? And he said, what can't he? He says, what should he do? And he said, jump. Jump.
Curry.
And I remember Scott looking at a box score one night. We were talking about Tobias Harris. And Tobias was a rookie, I think. And, you know, Scott had the box score. And Tobias, like, had two rebounds in the game. And Scott probably should have played Tobias more, you know. But Scott was looking at that, and he's just shaking his head, you know, like, okay, he can't play. He had two rebounds. But he's the guy I'd say that.
You weren't going to say Jason Kidd and energy and effort and all that stuff.
Yeah, Jason was a challenge.
And not as much of a challenge as Joe Prunty
Joe was just impossible. Yeah, he was impossible.
Super nice guy. He was very milquetoast. Not a good quote.
No. And I mean, George Karl, you know, you can go the gamut. You can go back to George Karl, and I remember after he left the Bucks and went to Denver, you know, same thing like Doug Collins, like George would, you know, he would talk so much you didn't know where to go with all the great stuff that he was giving you. And I know Michael Hunt and George, they had their moments. I mean, you know, but George was always worth a good story.
I'm glad you brought up Jason Kidd, because if he's kind of a villain in Milwaukee, he did not leave Bucks Twitter on good terms. We'll say that much. But one thing that did happen was the development of Giannis while he was here. And it makes me ask the question, both these teams, both Phoenix and Milwaukee less so, but not so long ago, these two teams were near the bottom of the league. You know, they've really kind of had, you could kind of argue, a rapid ascent. Maybe this is just the baseball guy in me who watches a team develop a plan over several years. But the Bucks essentially struck gold in the 2013 draft, and then again when they traded for Chris Middleton, and now they're in a position to stick their neck out there and get a guy like Jrue Holiday. Exactly what Phoenix did. They got Chris Paul to pair with the star they already had, and boom, these teams and first year players with these respective teams, they're in the finals. I guess you could say the Bucks have kind of gotten lucky. They did get a couple, you know, lottery tickets cash in here. And, you know, there's a lot of Joe Alexanders of the world here, and E.G. Anlions. And I mean, you could even go back to Andrew Bogut, which is more bad luck. Maybe this is the karmic kickback from that, the bad luck of the Bogut and Jabari Parker draft picks, but they haven't hit very frequently in the draft. They haven't developed a lot of guys. They developed Giannis, and maybe they should get credit for developing a generational talent out of pretty, you know, pretty raw cloth here. A guy who's 18 years old coming out of Greece. What do you think about that? Do you think the Bucks just maybe got lucky, or do we have to acknowledge that, you know, they took some big swings along the way? John Horst got this roster to where it is, you know, new guys added that seem to have fit what they were doing this season. How would you sort of look at the overall process that brought the Bucks to this place?
I've always thought that was the best thing Jason Kidd did with the Bucks, was help develop Giannis. And that was really job one in a way, wasn't it? I mean, it was job one. And nobody knew, you know, pick 15, talking about Giannis, pick 15 was going to be this two-time MVP and superstar. But it didn't just happen overnight. There was a lot of work. I know Matt and I have talked about it. One of the things was that terrible team, Giannis's rookie year, he actually got to play. You know, a lot of rookies that are at this stage in the draft don't even see the court. So they only won 15 games, but he played. And then when Jason came, you know, he made it his priority, put him in the point guard in summer league in Vegas. I remember that. And people are like, you're crazy. You know, some people thought he was crazy. I guess I didn't think he was crazy, but I didn't know how that was all going to work out. And that was a big part of Giannis's development. You know, I always said to people in Giannis's early days, I said, he's going to do one thing tonight you don't believe, right? Like in Oklahoma City, or he was playing against Durant when Durant was there. And I did a story where Durant really complimented him in those early days, right? But I always would tell people, you know, he might make a lot of mistakes, but he's going to do one thing you won't believe tonight. And he would. And of course, now he does those things on a regular basis. But I do think Jason gets credit for that.
Yeah, and obviously Giannis put in a ton of work himself, like, you know, but he needed guidance. He needed someone to let him know. And when you have a Hall of Fame point guard who can kind of teach him some of those, you know, tricks of the trade and angles and whatever, you know, things to look for, way to watch film, like, that matters and that's useful. And, you know, also Jason, you know, he was in a hard situation where Jabari Parker comes in and he's supposed to be the guy. He gets hurt. Giannis gets really good. Jabari's not the guy anymore. You got to manage that locker room, and maybe he did it well, maybe he didn't, but like, he had to make a choice of like, hey, this is a Giannis focused team right now. And that's where the future is. And, you know, so that's a tough call for Coach Spian to have to kind of shepherd your team through that. And you can nitpick. There's plenty to nitpick with Jason Kidd and the way he handled the Bucks and, you know, the schemes that they employed and the way that they played and, you know, whether he destroyed Giannis' shot or confidence by telling him stop shooting threes, you know, just focus on mid-range shots and just, you know, work your way out gradually. You know, there you can talk about all that. Of course, there are some fans who want to tell Giannis to stop shooting forever, like now. But it's like, you know, there are things you can say that maybe weren't the best. But overall, you know, I think that the relationship that he built with Giannis, the way that they worked together, the way that he kind of like, it was almost like Jason Kidd was like Giannis's college coach, if you want to put it that way. He was there for like 3 years. You know, he had that time when he was like 19 to like 22 to try things, to make mistakes, to fail and still get a chance to stay on the court, to learn, to kind of shape him into maybe more of the player he was going to be, even though he wasn't ready to be that guy yet. And then, you know, now he's able to transition and pick up some of the things that Bud is asking him to do because he had that foundation. So, you know, the Jason Kidd years weren't everything that Bucks fans hoped they would be. But they did play a part in getting them to where they are now.
Bucks, of course, will get to see Jason Kidd on the sideline next year as an opponent when they play the Dallas Mavericks. That should be interesting. All right, so we opened this with the biggest question everybody has. Will Giannis play? Now the next question everybody has. Can the Bucks win if Giannis doesn't play? Or if he's limited, or if he's, you know, getting 20 minutes a game, or just not the same player? They answered the bell, certainly in games 5 and 6 against Atlanta. They showed they could. Atlanta is not Phoenix. Atlanta, great season. Very, you know, tough team. Phoenix is a little bit different level. So I guess this is where we get the predictions from you guys. What you think is going to happen in this series. There's obviously the version where Giannis plays, the one where he doesn't. But run through it. Tell me who you think is going to win here when the Phoenix Suns and Milwaukee Bucks play for the NBA championship.
I'll start off. I do think Giannis is going to play in some capacity. I can't speculate on what that's even going to look like. To me, when I include that, and also that the Suns have home court, the fact that they're, the best defensive team in basketball, I think they do have an edge in the backcourt. For as good as Jrue Holiday is, he can't defend Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And I realize PJ Tucker's part of that and Middleton to a degree, but with Giannis just changes so much for this Bucks team. And I just don't think he's going to be 100%. So not knowing, I'm going to hedge and say Suns in seven, because I don't think the Suns are like this monster power that the Bucks, even with a limited Giannis, can't hang with. They've got their own flaws. So I'm going to stick with home court and the higher seed and say Suns in seven.
All right. How about Matt? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's just so hard. There's just so many variables that we can't fill in, as Jim kind of mentioned. And the Suns do have the advantage of one of rest, and two, general health, and then three, of having seen what the Bucks look like when they play without Giannis. You know, because in game five, the Hawks, yes, they saw the Bucks for like half of game four without Giannis, but now you have a couple days to game, or at least one day to game plan and adjust and to come up with your own plan as the Bucks. So you come out there and, the Bucks got off to a great start in game five, because the Hawks, they can kind of guess what's going to happen, but to see it on film and to see it in action is different. So the Suns have had a chance to see what the Bucks look like, whether they play with Giannis or without Giannis, and they can be prepared for both iterations. I think the Suns do have the edge, in a bunch of different factors. I think the best version of the Bucks and the best version of the Suns are pretty evenly matched, and the Bucks may not be the best version of themselves right now. So I think I'll just join Jim and say Suns in seven, but, there's a lot of things that could get filled in over the course of time that could change that. I know this is a Bucks centric podcast. No one wants to hear Suns predictions, but the Bucks are like just very legitimately going into the series as underdogs. I mean, that's the situation that they're in. And if they can win this series as underdogs with all the, the question marks that they're facing right now, then it'll be a heck of a party in Milwaukee. That's for sure.
They were the underdog, of course, against Brooklyn. That worked out for them even after a 2-0 deficit. So we know they have it in them. Charles, what do you think? What's your prediction?
Yeah, well, I have to be different, I guess. So, of course, I should say Bucks in six, but I'll say Bucks
for the culture, Charles.
For the culture. But I'll say Bucks in seven, and maybe optimistically thinking that Giannis will be back in game two or three. Maybe it's game three. Could you imagine him coming back in game three and the series is tied 1-1 and he walks out there on the Fiserv court, for the first time in the finals? The place would, or the Deer District might explode. So I think both teams have this emotion. You saw Chris Paul at the end of the series against the Clippers. I thought, and they kept showing it on television. I thought, is this guy ever going to quit celebrating? I mean, he went up to everyone. As the former Clippers, the Clippers people as well, because he had played there. I mean, he was so excited. So I think both teams have this emotion, and I think that will make for a great series. I also think the thing we saw in those last two games against Atlanta is that Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, okay, they're Olympians and they deserve it. They are really that good, people. And I think when Giannis is playing, it's easy to get, he's so spectacular. It's easy to say, well, those are the sidekicks. Well, they're a little better than sidekicks, a lot better. So I do think Phoenix, the thing that amazed me, and maybe Jim and Matt can speak to this, but DeAndre Ayton, like, he is so improved. I mean, he is such a good player now that I think that makes the Suns, just so much more dynamic. It's not just about Booker or about Chris Paul. And And we know Jay Crowder, he's a thorn in the Bucks' side, like wherever he goes. Oh no, they got Jay Crowder again. You know, when he was with the Heat, he was killing them. What's he going to do in this series? So I probably should say the Suns, but let's say Bucks in seven, and the, you know, there could be a big party in Milwaukee. That would be incredible.
Pessimism has served me well over the course of my career, so I'm actually going to go the other way and say Suns in five. That is assuming Giannis is not going to be approaching 100%. I obviously, like everyone else, have no idea what to expect on that front. I'm going to say Suns in five. I think they are the better team, but it certainly remains to be seen. I am willing, if Larry Sanders comes to a Bucks game and is recreating that gif, giving thumbs up to everybody in the room, I am willing to change my prediction, because that is some great, great juju. Larry Sanders, by the way, I think of him every July 1st when Bobby Bonilla Day rolls around for the New York Mets, because he's still on the payroll for the Bucks. So that's something that always pops up.
Maybe,
would love to see Larry Sanders.
Maybe there. Larry Sanders will bring Giannis another pair of Louis Vuitton shoes, because when Giannis was a rookie, you know, Larry Sanders, I think it was some game really early in the season, and Giannis calls a bunch of media over. He calls us to him. He goes, "Look at this. Larry Sanders gave me shoes. Louis Vuitton, two pairs. And he was so pumped to have Louis Vuitton shoes. And I had actually never met Larry Sanders. That was like the first week of games. I think Larry was suspended for some reason. I have no idea. He hadn't been playing or wasn't playing. We go over to ask him, like, "What's up? You got him some shoes?" He's like, "Oh, you know I don't talk pregame." I'm like, "I don't even know you."
Oh, man.
But two pairs. Best teammate. Larry Sanders. Oh, best teammate. Two pairs. So
endearing. Yeah, Giannis, our endearing hero.
Endearing rookie Giannis. Never change.
He and Chris Middleton, would be pretty special to see them. No player on either team has won an NBA title. Torrey Craig is the only one guaranteed to get a ring because he's played for both teams this year. But somebody's going to be new there. Chris Paul, long time, first time finals. Bucks finally break through. This is a cool thing with a lot of special storylines. Jim, any last thoughts before we send everybody away?
No, my only thoughts, Matt, Charles, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys jumping on with JR and I on short notice. This was a lot of fun to do. Hopefully we can do it again. You know, who knows if Charles is right, you know, maybe in the off season. But thank you guys. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you. Thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Game one of the NBA Finals in Phoenix Tuesday night. Thursday night you get game two, and then back Sunday at Pfizer Forum for game three. The NBA Finals are coming to Milwaukee, everybody. Find everything Jim has at jsonline.com. Read all about it. We got content coming out of our ears. You should enjoy it. Lori Nickel is there. Lots of great photos. We got all kinds of stuff. So give that a check. And heck, maybe go through the archives and find some of the good stuff that Charles Gardner and Matt Velasquez have blessed us with over the years. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you again soon. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.